Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast from Franklin, Tennessee, live Motherhood Retreat 2026. Ladies, make some noise. All right. Oh, wow. Wow. Franklin has shown
up.
Wow.
Showed up, showed out. My showed goodness. Up.
Oh, I mean, so we are live here in Franklin, Tennessee at the factory, and we are at the Intentional Motherhood Retreat having a wonderful weekend. And we want to respond to your questions, and this has been such a wonderful weekend already. We've been processing all of that, but we're going to do a live Q&A from the questions of the ladies in the room. So you have been sending those questions, and we've been so grateful. They're not anonymous. We know your names. We know who asked the questions. I'm just kidding. We don't know. Anonymous questions, but per usual, one of the best podcast hosts of all time, in my opinion, Joey Odom, is here to guest host the podcast. So I'm going to relinquish this space, and I'm going to hand it over to the one and only Joey Odom. Ladies, will you please welcome Joey Odom to the podcast? Yeah. And
Thank you. This is the third or fourth. That is by far the greatest applause for the podcast so far. You all were amazing. Ever. Well done.
Wow.
Hey, let's dive in. We don't have time to waste. So we got questions from the audience throughout the weekend. So listener, we're here with 600 women and it's been an unbelievable weekend. This is the last day of it. The very first night, I want to go to a question that someone sent in, and it wasn't just one person. And the question is this, and Brooke, it's for you.
Oh.
Where'd you get that jacket you were wearing, son?
What?
That's
a
legit question. They want to know. They need the jacket you had. They want to buy it for their husband.
I have to say something. I never get these questions, first of all. Second of all, it's always directed towards my wife.
Yes, it is.
So in your face. Yes. First time.
And Diane. I'm telling you, Elizabeth and Diane, I mean, the fashion is out of control. It's unbelievable.
Remember,
so good.
Women dress for women.
Yes, the women dress for women. Yeah. So where did you get it? Don't leave us hanging,
Zara.
Please.
Zara, man. Yeah, get it. It's good. What Go was get it? Zara.
Zara.
Yeah.
Sounds like a women's store.
Yeah. If you know, you know.
Hey,
Jeff knows.
So for the listener, we had Brooke gave a talk that was on what your husband wished they knew. And it was, to me, it's the best talk I've ever heard on the heart of a man. The women were furiously taking notes. It really was so good. And we've had probably a massive amount of these questions have been related to that talk. And so we're going to talk, some of this will be really, really practical. A lot of this, there are going to be some good theory stuff too, but the practical questions will be plentiful. So this one is very practical, and I want to start with the women, and then I want to hear it from the men. So Diane, we're going to start with you, and then Elizabeth second. What are a few go-to questions that help a husband open up. So when you want your husband to engage with you, do you have a few go-to questions to get them to open up. So we'll hear from ladies first, and then we'll go Phil and Brooke after.
Okay, this is a really good question. First, let me give you one that doesn't work.
So good.
How do you feel about this, honey?
That's good.
Why does that not work? Maybe that's a dumb question. Why does that not work?
Because most of our husbands are a little less aware about what they feel, and I think it's a little less intimidating to say, what do you think about this? And then maybe work their way to, what does that feel like for you?
I love that.
Maybe that's it.
That's good.
Really good.
That's good.
Really good.
Okay, it's not a question, it's more a phrase. This also works really well for your teenagers, so file that away. But just saying, tell me more about that.
Yeah.
I want to know more about that. Yeah. You might have to say it a few times, but it really, I mean, who doesn't want to be asked? Like, it shows, it communicates to the person, to your husband, to anybody you're talking to. Like, I really care about what you're talking about, and I want to know more about it, and I want to understand. You can even add that. Tell me more about that. I really want to understand what it is you're saying, what it is you're thinking, maybe eventually what it is you're feeling. And then the other thing, it's not a question to ask them, more of an environment to be aware of, and I'm still learning this in real time, is that so often we can kind of connect as we're going, right? Like, because we're taking care of kids, we have learned how to master tuning out everything that is happening so that we can try to have a conversation, right? But that's a lot harder for most of our husbands. And maybe it's hard for you, but I think women are just naturally more wired that way, to be constantly connecting even as we're doing a bunch of things. And so I think even just being aware of what environment makes it easier for your husband to be able to open up, and it's probably not going to be while you are also doing all the domestic things and making dinner and your kids are around. So just being aware of that, because I know for years I would be so frustrated of like, this is our one chance that I can ask you that question and I can hear about your day. And he'd be like, I can't talk to you about that right now. And I'd be kind of like irritated about it.
You're always irritated.
Yes, yeah. So we've had to
learn. We have an easy marriage. I don't know what you're talking about.
Never. But we had to learn to communicate about what works for each of us to actually be able to have meaningful conversation.
What an interesting insight that women are always connecting, and it is. And even for me, I'm emotionally built like a woman. However,
it is not physically.
No. But what you just said is really true, because it does. Even with that, it still becomes hard for me at times to just kind of like, oh yeah, let me just dive in and tell you all of those things. And so you're right, that environment, curating the environment, that is such a wonderful insight. Phil, I'd love to hear from you. What from your side, the questions that get you to open up?
My response to this is, Diane is so easy for me to open up to, because she's such a great listener. The reason some of you moms went, I want to come to your house, is because you know that she would just look you in the eyes and love you like you're the most important person on planet Earth. Some of you, if you ask her, she might even let you actually come. But anyway, so I don't know. I feel like I'm blessed with a wife who I know so deeply loves me and listens to me go on and on and on. So if your husband is an external processor, like me, who talks a lot, my advice would be, don't shut him down, okay? Even if he's driving you nuts. Like, so he told me this three times. How many times are you going to ask me again what you think you should do about that guy that you're mad at? You know, it's like, I already told you what I think. You know, that will shut him down. Yeah. But if you let him process, because he's figuring it out while he's talking, and then you respond with wisdom, that's going to help him just keep opening up to you. And that's what Diane does for me. Our problem is the reverse, is I'm not a good listener, and I will interrupt and talk over her, which is very hurtful. And if your husband is more quiet, more introverted, then I think Elizabeth's question to lovingly say, tell me more about that, drawing him out is the right way to go. But I'm just thinking, this verse was mentioned, I'm not sure who, one of our teachings, one of you had on the screen, James. This you know, my brothers, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And so I think being a good listener, I'm married to Diane, and so I can pour my heart out to her. Slow to speak, that's what I'm working on. Diane doesn't have to work on that. Slow to anger. And I think that if you want your husband to open up, if he senses that you're angry at him, he's not going to open up. And here's the rest of that verse 4. This is why we're to be slow to anger, because the anger of man doesn't achieve the righteousness of God. And in simple English, what that means is the spiritual heart of God that you're longing for, it's not going to be achieved through anger. So I think listening with love, and when you feel the anger, confessing it in your heart immediately is sin, I think, and then expressing grace to your husband will help him open up more. So
I do like that. That was a great insight when you said that if they feel like they're angry, if you're angry at them, they're going to shut down. Elizabeth, you said it, and this works for teenagers as well. I actually don't see, and this will sound like a joke, and it's not, I don't see a lot of distinction in probably the way that you would talk to your teenage son. And in that respect, when you start getting, it's not dissimilar from speaking to your husband. It's not as like momming them, but as being, is like being delicate, being fragile with their feelings at the same time. You know what I mean? I think there's actually some pretty good similarity between those two things.
Yeah, no, I agree. What came to mind as you were saying that is I'm thinking of my teenage son who's here, and it's setting the right environment.
So right.
And waiting. You might set the right environment and it might not be a moment where they feel like they can open up.
Yeah.
But maybe the next time it will very much be in a moment where they start pouring their heart out to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brooke, I'm curious for you and Elizabeth, what are some things that she asks, or maybe what are some things that you would like for her to ask in order for you to open up, that kind of taps into that, that will allow you to go beyond the surface to really open up and let her see where your heart really is?
Why are you chuckling?
I'm like, yes, tell me what you would like me to ask.
Okay, so one thing, Phil was saying how he's not a good listener, and maybe that's true at times, but my favorite thing is when he talks over Diane is she gets frustrated and then he immediately goes, I'm sorry, sweetheart. I know I'm still working on that. It's so cute, isn't
that.
It?
I love
that's
that.
The energy we want. Good job. I'm saying that you do a great job of it apologizing. Yeah.
Very good.
I'm honoring you. I'm saying it's a good thing. It's a great example.
Okay, I didn't get what you're saying. Okay, thank you. All
right. I know, that's why I was like, he doesn't understand what I said. It's actually not a phrase, it's body language and tone. Ladies, I cannot tell you how much you communicate when you don't use words. It's overwhelming, honestly. And the faces and the body language where she can say 90% more than her words ever will is impeccable. And so here's what I'll say. It's phrases, but if the phrase is not sincere, because you're married, we're almost 20 years into this, you know it. Your husband knows when you're sincere about, like, hey, could you tell me more about that? Or like the therapeutic, I know I'm supposed to say this. Can you tell me more about that? Like, I don't actually want to know. I'm just irritated and I know I'm supposed to ask this question. So I would say, like, if as much, the questions are important, but the questions are equally as important, in my opinion, as the sincerity of heart that they're coming from. And when she's sincere about, honey, I see that this is really hard. Like, can you please be honest with me about what that feels like? That's very different than just a phrase that is repeated because it's supposed to be done. So my only advice would just be work in some of this stuff into your own heart and situation before you try to even activate some of that. Because if it's not true in your heart, your body and your tone will deceive you, even if you don't want it to. And that's been huge for us. And then can I just give you one life hack that has been so helpful for me? I don't retain information in my brain. If she gives me a list, that's awesome. I won't remember it. And that's because my brain doesn't work the same way hers does. She's incredibly efficient. Now, maybe this is, you have this in your life and or it's the opposite, but I'll just say this. A shared note app could save a marriage. It really can.
Amen.
Yes. So if there's a list and she's like, hey, honey, could you check the list? I put some things on there. That is way different than, hey, can we go to the bank and can you transfer this money to here? And then, by the way, Duke has this pickup. Oh, also, Bertie has this appointment. Are you going to be at it? Also, FYI, can we talk about this when our kids are losing their minds because we didn't say yes to something? That is a very different situation than, hey, can you check the note app? When I have a moment, I check it. And like, then I have a list to accomplish. And ladies, we love to accomplish lists. So I just want to tell you, that has been a huge gift. Long way to answer.
I will say one of the things, the practices that my wife and I have done that is transformational, very similar to that, is a 1-hour Sunday meeting to totally sync up. Because what you just described and what we do, what you're doing there, and this is magical, This is a conversion from expectation to agreement.
Yes.
You're saying like, I have an expectation of you have an expectation of me. Hold on one second. Let's eliminate the expectations and create an agreement together. Yeah. So it's a magical thing, that 1 hour, that shared note app, it's massive. One other thing I'll say, that you, as you're talking about tone and environment, I think one concern as men that we might have, and as women too, is when we're opening up, there's a question. If we don't feel safe there, what we're really wondering is, are you going to weaponize what I'm saying against me later?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so what the tone, the environment, all of it's so, so important. Next question. I want to go to Brooke and Elizabeth here. Brooke told a story a few minutes ago about wearing a hat that Elizabeth said that she didn't like at all, and Brooke received it as criticism and not clarity. And so the question is,
or kindness, or yeah.
So the question is, how? This is a question from someone in the audience. How do you stay honest and vulnerable with a spouse who hears feedback as criticism?
I don't know. Let's go to the next thing.
So I want both of you. Brooke, will you start? How do you stay honest and vulnerable with a spouse who hears feedback as criticism?
This is tender for me because I really don't fully know. I'll just be honest. Like, Elizabeth can see the problem in everything, which is a gift and a curse. She knows that, and I know that. And she makes me better. But if that's not in its right place, it can be really hurtful and it's not meaningful. But like, she can't help but look at a situation and be like, here's room for improvement. I can't tell you how many things I've never thought that need to be improved until I got married and I was like, everything's broken. Like, I don't know. Like, the whole world's going down. And how have we survived so long? I don't know. And just to be true, my mind doesn't work that way. I am a critical thinker, but it's a different angle or lens, but it's a huge, and again, this isn't actually like shade. It's a huge gift. But again, just like all of our strengths have backside weaknesses, a lot of you see things that your husband doesn't. And to point, again, it's mostly, I think, tone, posture, all that. But how do you do that? I think, how do you not take it as criticism? I think by depositing encouragement. You can say a lot of things when he has the security to know that the other stuff is like there. So one of the reasons, like full transparency, one of the reasons like those little comments actually really bother me right now, and this is like full, like I'm not hiding any of this, this is real, is because we have been in a season that like the bank is pretty low when it comes to affirmation both ways, because we've been just surviving a lot of medical stuff. And honestly, we've noted, like, don't worry, we're going back to marriage counseling in 1 week, 2 weeks. Yeah, it's great. We're back in it too. Like, we're literally doing this with you. Because in real time, it is so hard when you have all these different variables coming at you to stay connected and close. And so those comments right now are super tender for me because the bank's a little empty. At the same time, I know her heart. I know how she operates. I could not be as sensitive. And I also like poking fun. So I think it's like that whole combination of why that's how it comes for me. But I would just say, if you can start depositing in a positive way, and then letting him know, like, I think having that conversation for us is like, if I don't want her opinion, I shouldn't ask. And I've learned,
wow,
there's times when I need to just be like, I feel comfortable in the clothes I'm wearing. I don't need to care if she likes it, because if I ask her, there's a good chance I won't be able to recover from this. Yeah. And that's as I've gotten older, like, I don't always need her opinion on everything.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
Elizabeth, I have a side. Go ahead. Yes.
Can I respond?
Please.
Okay, mother-in-law here. But in all honesty, Brooke has been my son since he was 17. And even more, as we have known each other more and been more and more open and honest with each other, we share generational pain. And if that's the story with your husband or your wife, that can make them very, very sensitive to, there's actually a name for it, like, can't remember what it is, but it's some sort of dysphoria.
Yeah.
Which means almost unbearable. Because I respond so much like you. If Phil doesn't smile at me in the morning, I think he's mad at me. And he says, give me a cup of coffee before I have to smile at you. I'm hypersensitive to criticism because we grew up with a deficit of encouragement.
Yeah.
We didn't have parents who were looking us in the eye and saying, I see you, I value you. You are so good at this, you're amazing at this. We had parents who yeah. didn't know how to do that because nobody had ever done that for them. And it can be really hard to be married to a person like that. It can take an amazing amount of love, and Phil has worked so hard at it for so long, and I'm still fragile. Even after all these years of being really well loved by Phil, who tells me things about me that I can't believe, that I just can't yet receive. You know, he has told me that I was beautiful when I was a 19-year-old bride. And when I was 9 months pregnant with my fourth child, skin, you know, going out again, he told me I was beautiful. And I am now 66. And I tell you what, the stomach of a woman who's had four kids, who's 66 years old, is not beautiful by any stretch of the match. Now we just don't talk about that. He still thinks I'm beautiful. And he thinks I'm beautiful all the way through, even though he has seen the mess that I am.
Yeah,
so,
good point.
If that's you, you have an opportunity to love somebody into healing. And I think it's hard, but I also think it's the results down the road of the generations are indescribable.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here. Just viewing the health of this relationship of the four of you. It just, I mean, the two of you who, you know, Brooke and Elizabeth, you run an organization around being, you know, marriage and parenting, and you just said, hey, we're getting back in the lab and going back to counseling. How healthy is that for you to say that? You are his in-law, you're his mother-in-law, and you just spoke into that your daughter, knowing that your daughter sometimes will jab him and hurt him a little bit, and you're able to speak into that and see all sides of it and love all sides of it. It's just, it really is one of the most beautiful examples of kind of multi-generational life together. It's just, wow. It really is just so beautiful. This is, my wife and I think now that our kids are kind of later teenagers, of how do we become great in-laws someday? We think about that all the time. And just this example, it's just, it's beautiful. So just as a side, just thank you. It's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah, Elizabeth is not mean, by the way. She's wonderful.
No. By the way, I fully understand all this.
Elizabeth,
you're a one on the Enneagram. My wife is one on the Enneagram. You are able. You have a superpower.
Yes.
Of being able to see how things can be made better and more beautiful.
Yes.
It's a wonderful characteristic. You just said the same, Brooke. So Elizabeth,
can I say something?
What's that?
You just said something really complimentary of all of us, but I just wanted to say, none of that could have been said if it wasn't for Jesus. All right.
Yeah,
and I want you to know, the Bible says if any man or woman is in Christ, they're a new person. Yeah. They're a new creation. 2 Corinthians 5:17. And he has changed us from the inside out. I had not good relationships with girls before I met the Lord. And so when Diane and I, right from the get-go, it was a pure and godly relationship, which has then borne fruit. And the beauty of the gospel is, even if your story has pain in it, like Brooks and Diane's and mine doesn't, I mean, my mom took my Regal Beagle. Other than that's the worst thing that happened to me. Other than that, I have no scars, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So we have different stories. But what I'm trying to say is you can be a first generation believer, and you can pass on what you didn't get.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the gospel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can give to your kids in Jesus' name. You can forgive your parents, and then you can give to your kids what you never got.
Yeah.
And they'll have a different story.
Yeah.
And so, Brooke, his kids, Duke and Scarlett and Birdie and Sloan, are going to have a different story when they think about their dad because he did the work. Because he said, I'm not going to pass it on. My kids are going to experience something different. They're going to be talking. They're going to be crying one day if the Lord tarries. And you're going to be here a long time. But, I mean, that day could come, you know?
I'm trying to
I got to say one more thing. My best, can I take
Phil,
one more
thing? Phil, you got to pass it. You can't keep taking over.
Can I say one more thing?
Okay. Well, Joey's down in charge. Tight 30 seconds, yeah.
Okay. I'm not going
to. He's going to take the whole thing.
No, please do. Please do.
Okay, I'm going to say is my best friend who managed the band I played in.
I didn't manage your band.
No, you didn't.
Best friend.
But I would have let you. No, he was, he's 15 years older than me. He died at, like, you know, 80 or something. I tried to speak at his funeral, and I started crying. But his granddaughters got up and tried to talk about him and were just crying about how much they loved their grandfather. I'm just saying, this is what can happen when you pass on what Jesus has given you. There'll be a generation of people that will just treasure the time they have with you. Okay, I said that in less than 30 seconds.
Phil, I just the way you always point to Jesus, bro. It's unbelievable. I mean, follow me as I follow Christ. That is Phil Comer right there.
1 Corinthians 11:1.
Unbelievable. And just pops out his spiritual biceps on us, like, you know what I mean?
It's actually imitate me as I follow Christ. I can't say that yet, but that's what Paul said.
So good.
Wow. I wonder where I get my perfectionism from.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
different
cool.
Directions.
Yeah, cool Bible verse quote, Joey.
Sorry. Yeah, it's wrong, but cool.
Elizabeth. So, question for you. This, I want to hear about that. How do you? This is the question. This question really is, I believe, like really directed for you. So you know the impact of how you work, what your words can be on Brooke, but at the same time, how can you stay honest and vulnerable with a spouse who does hear feedback as criticism? Maybe like Brooke or not, but for the person out there, how can you be honest and vulnerable, but it's with the spouse who hears feedback as criticism?
You know, Mom already touched on it, but the thing that was coming to mind as that question kind of started is, you know, I think I mentioned it, maybe it was yesterday sometime, but the importance of really knowing each other's stories and the people in your life that are close to you, your best friends, your family members, really knowing their stories, that idea of that we can be an agent of hurt or of healing. And, you know, for Brooke and I, our dynamic of him growing up in a home with essentially no words of affirmation, which created just a high need for affirmation because he was starved for it. And then him marrying someone who is not naturally affirming. And the minute life is stressful, which is like every moment of our life all the time, my need for control goes up, which means my need to perfect everything and everyone around me goes up. And so we've really had to learn what is happening in that moment, what feels so personal to him and what feels personal to me, that why is he not letting me just help him, right? Because I actually mean it. Those of us who see everything that could be improved, it's actually our way of loving. And when it's done well, it's beautiful and it's redemptive and we are bringing God's kingdom to earth. And when it's done out of stress or in our flesh or out of anger, it is the hardest thing about us, and it is not received as loving. And I'll just be honest, the thing I'm learning right now in real time, because life is moving so fast, I feel like I have very little emotional, relational margin right now. I've had a significant increase in pain since January. And it just, if any of you living in chronic pain, it just, any margin that you had, which is not a lot when you have a lot of kids, it just takes all of that margin and energy. And sometimes I will say things to Brooke or say things to my kids. This is happening a lot with my older kids right now. And it will come out and I will like literally think, man, if I had just said the same words in a very different tone, and if I had put them actually in the form of a question, it would have been received very, very different. It would have felt a lot less like I'm just telling you what you should be doing better, but like it's a collaborative, hey, what do you think about this? And so I'm learning in real time, like how we say things really, really matters. And we can cause a lot of damage, or we can create a really healthy, beautiful team that is all working together simply by how we say that combination of words.
Yeah. I do love what you said, that is you loving. The way when you're correcting what may be received as criticism is you loving. And I think a key in all of this is the quality time you're spending with your spouse will give you a lens that makes you that reminds you that they do love you. My wife could tell me the worst criticism about me in the middle of a date night where we're connected, and I receive it as love. I never receive it as criticism. So these rhythms of connection, these rhythms of, you know, physical connection, time connection, date nights, I think it's so important to be able to help you to be able to give that in a way that's more palatable.
Yeah.
I want to turn to another question. I'm actually very excited about this question, and I'm going to start with Brooke and Diane, and then because you're on one side of the table, and then Elizabeth and Phil, you're on the other side of the table. And so Brooke and Diane, how do you parent well when you didn't have healthy examples growing up? I'm going to start with you, and then we're going to turn that over because the two of you did have healthy examples growing up, Elizabeth and Phil. So I want to begin. Brooke, Diane, how do you parent well when you didn't have good examples growing up?
Well, for sake of time, I'm going to make it brief. We're all going to make it brief, okay? We're all going to try to make it brief. That's just a commitment that we're making to each other. My commitment to be brief is this. Find really good models. If you don't have them, pray for them. If you find one, do whatever you can to link to them. This is not exaggeration. Like, Phil was that in my life. Now, that was a huge gift. But if you met Phil this weekend and you're like, this has been life-changing, and Phil's a really, like, generous guy. He will connect with you and meet with you. Like, ask Phil, who would you suggest? Like, what's a model? Give me, you know, ask him questions while here. I cannot tell you how helpful it is to have somebody just kind of show you the way. And so my models have been Phil, my therapist, good friends, a network of care to help you see how to be a good dad. And then to be honest about where you're not. And I will just say lastly, it's really important to know that you have to unlearn before you can relearn. And so one of the really hard parts is just like what comes natural when what comes natural to you is just damaging, destructive and hard. That's really disappointing and challenging. And so it's being humble enough, I think, to be like, okay, I actually don't think this is good, but I have to unlearn this way to relearn this way. Mm.
Diane, how about for you? How do you parent well when you didn't have that example?
I think the most important thing for me has been to actually discover and realize and admit and say it out loud that I was deeply hurt by my family. It took me a long time to say that because there was so much good in my family too, so much good. And that tension between they provided me for me really well. They did things together as a family, but my parents were really broken and they did the best they could. So how do you honor that and say, whoa, that wasn't okay. Those words spoken over me in anger and frustration and in their own brokenness, I've carried those. So understanding that, the sooner you can face that, I didn't go to counseling because there was no counseling at that time, unless you had like what they called nervous breakdowns or a psychotic incident. There wasn't any sort of counseling, but I had wise women speaking into my life. But the sooner you can go to get help, these therapists understand the way trauma affects our responses, and you need to understand that. And so I guess I would say taking it on yourself to say, okay, I'm not okay, and I need help getting healthy. It's just getting healthy. And then you can, that way when you are reacting to your kids, but you're actually reacting to your mom or to your dad, you can stop and say, Elizabeth, I am so sorry. That is not your fault. This is on me. Please forgive me. Mom is trying to get the help I need so I can love you better.
That's so good. Wow. So, Phil, this is you. You did have a good example. You melted all of our hearts when you talked about how much you love your mom last night, how you miss her every day. You married a spouse who maybe didn't have a great example. You did have a great example. What is that like? And I know this is a loaded question, and I'm sorry to ask it to be brief, but what is that like? How can you effectively come alongside your spouse when you've had such different examples in parenting?
Are you asking me, how do I come alongside Diane when she didn't have?
Yeah, she didn't have the example. You did have the example, and then you unite together in your one unit parenting together. So how are you?
Yeah. Well, I'd be brief, right?
You have
I basically,
to be brief.
I think the overarching thing is, in God's perfect plan, your children need a mother and a father. And there are single moms here, and my heart breaks for you. It's how much harder you need what Brooke said. You need other mothers and fathers. That's the beauty of the church. You know, Jesus, when Jesus was speaking, the room was too crowded for his mom and his siblings to get in. They said, hey, your mom and your siblings are outside. Remember, and he said, who are my mother and father and brother? Those do the will of God. And some pastors will say, see, he's like putting down the nuclear family. It's about no, he wasn't. My personal opinion is he went outside afterwards and hugged his mom. And the reason I think so is because the last thing he did on the cross was tell John to take care of his mother. Say, but what he was saying is there's a family. And so I think we need to figure this out in community with others, especially if there's been a lot of brokenness. So, and then as a married couple, you need to get on the same page and stay on the same page. My friend Todd Newell, who was a founding elder of our church, sat with me yesterday. He was our business pastor, but he was the best premarital counselor. Danita is here. He and his wife, we just had him do all premarital. And they told me the more premarital they did, in almost every couple, they hadn't even talked about major things. And they're realizing that to get on the same page and stay on the same page. So when you're raising kids, you want to pray together for your kids and talk about how things are going with your kids. You do it together. If you have the privilege of having a husband who loves Jesus, then you've got that. And if you don't, it's going to be harder. So I guess that's what I'd say is talk together, pray together, figure it out together, listen to each other. Mm-hmm. Diane has insights. She's an intuitive. I'm not. So she intuits things before I see it. So I will listen to her and we'll figure out how to parent together. So I don't know. That's my answer.
I love that.
As far as like, what do you do if you had good examples? You copy them.
Yes.
So you quoted 1 Corinthians 11:1. Paul said,
kind of,
mimic me because I'm mimicking Christ. So my dad, I'm just trying to copy all the good stuff my dad did. He just was interested in me. When I was not a Christian, I was playing in the band. If we were anywhere near Santa Clara, California, he'd come listen to us. Good job, son. When I became a pastor, started preaching. Good sermon, son. You know, good pagan music. Good sermon. You know, he just I knew my dad cared about me. So I want to care about my kids like that.
What's so cool about that is what you just described was good example, bad example, connection covers it. I love you said that, yeah.
You got to remember, and then I'll shut up. Brooke will hit me, but anyway.
I don't physically abuse you. I do not do that.
When you're growing up and somebody does something that touches you and you say, I want to be like that, that's learning from positive. When somebody hurts you because they lashed out at you in anger and you're thinking, I don't want to be like that. Mm. We learn a lot from negative by saying, I don't want to be like that. So that's okay. All of it can work together for good.
Elizabeth, will you close us out here on this question? You have clearly the greatest example of parents that I've ever seen. Brooke did not have the example that was on the same level as that. How do you do that together? How do you take such different experiences and then parent well together?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the first thing that came to mind when you started to ask that question is that even if you came from a really good family, like I did, I came from a really great family, there's so much that I want to instill into my kids that I got. Even family rhythms that were like huge pillars in our home that I want to be pillars in our home. But here's the reality. I married Brooke, our stories combined. So he brought things that were from his family, both really good. There's some really good things in his family and hard things, just like there's hard things in my family. And then God gave us kids who are very, very different than the kids that I grew up with in my family. We have neurodiversity. We have disabilities. We have me and intense chronic illness and limits in my body. We have so many other things in our story. And what I have been just shocked by over and over again is how much, even though I grew up in a really great family, I have to unlearn and parent differently because I have different kids. And so I think it's so important that you and your spouse, and it's not going to look perfect, and you're probably going to wish maybe your husband was like more into figuring it out with you at times. Shaming him into it will never work. Learn from my failure. But it's so important to what Dad said of you and your husband being able to come together and ask God, what family have you given us? What kids have you given us, and what generation are we raising them in? What do they actually need? Yes, there's so much information out there. This is how you should talk to your kids about this, and this is the tone you should use. But we can so easily, like with all the experts, with all the information, just plan the Holy Spirit right out of it, right?
Wow.
So you and your husband sitting down and saying, what is really, really important? What are hills that we are going to die on? We are going to find a way to implement this into our family. And what is the family we actually have? What is the mom and the dad that's actually raising these kids? And what is our family supposed to look like? And I think if there's one time to have seasons where you have tunnel vision with your family, it's when you are raising your kids, when they're little, or when your family's going through just a really tough season. That's not the time we need to be constantly looking outside and elsewhere. You need a few people speaking into your family and what it is that you need, but it's you and your husband asking the Holy Spirit to inform what all those rhythms should look like and what each kid needs.
What a great way to end it. I mean, unbelievable.
She's really good. Smart. She's good. And exceedingly attractive. And I just want to...
Listener, really like
by the way,
today.
Yeah. Very good. Very good, Elizabeth.
It wasn't this hat, by the way. It was not this hat. And there's a lot more to that story than he shared.
Yeah, easy now. Hey, if you love these four, please applaud.
Oh, come on.